This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.
When Ryan's, when it's time to begin, it's on the Rewind to Raw with John Pollock and Waiting the A-Team. That makes sense of these things we see in the ring every week on TV. It's Rewind to Raw. For Monday night, download it Tuesday morning from the Post Wrestling site. It's Rewind to Raw for Monday night on USA Now on the John and Way. Take the mic.
Hello, everybody. Rewind to Raw continues because I know all of you out there, Post Wrestling Cafe members, we're already a half hour deep. And what a behind the scenes expose we give you on a weekly basis. How does this show run?
Some might call it unreal.
Unreal. The things that unreal would never go into. This is behind the microphone. The microphone controversy. Well, here we are to chat about Raw from Madison Square Garden. We went over the news today, including the passings of Bob Caudle and George Tahinas. An update from Tanea Brooks, a.k.a. Rebel, and the health issues she is going through. Wrestle Kingdom 20, which has sold out its allotment of tickets for its configuration, likely in the neighborhood of 40,000 tickets now out for this show. So this is going to be among the most successful shows of the Bushiroad era. And I also question, Wei, when New Japan will ever come close to doing something like this again. This is going to be such a huge day for New Japan Pro Wrestling. And in some ways, it's really important of doing anything in this show that hopefully will capitalize on some of this momentum. Like, you have 7 weeks to build up to this show and New Year's Dash, and maybe it's going to be impossible. Like, people are just here for the Tanahashi retirement, but you have to give it your best effort that you have the attention of the wrestling world on this day. And how can we inject a lot of enthusiasm for 2026 and the next generation of New Japan?
No doubt. I mean, first and foremost, they have to deliver a very compelling, hopefully emotional goodbye to Hiroshi Tanahashi. Hopefully a great match, you know, to go with that as well. But they also have to set course for the future and really showcase whatever new stars that they have planned. I mean, we know now, like, you know, the live attendance is a success, but I'm very curious to see how internationally, especially, how much buzz the show gets, because, you know, Wrestle Kingdoms of late haven't necessarily reached that level.
And then also going through quite the three nights for TNA at Full Sail University, giving everybody lessons in PR and going through some of the lineups for NXT Gold Rush and 3 hours of AEW this Wednesday night and the rematch between Ariel Helwani and Tony Khan that is going down Tuesday on the Ariel Helwani program.
I can't wait. I'll be listening for sure.
On to Raw, we are going to head, and we have got a number from WrestleTix of 18,110.
Wow. Amazing.
And among those 18,110 was not one McMahon, but rather two McMahons that were spotted. We got Stephanie McMahon, who was showing on camera, Shane McMahon, who was not.
Is that so?
Wow, so this was I was seeing all these posts about Shane McMahon, and I think this was like from like some account, and it's like, is this definitely Shane at this Raw? And no, he posted he was there with his son Rogan, and they were like 10th row on the floor, and they were there to see John Cena. And I found it really interesting that, you know, Shane McMahon not getting any sort of mention on the show, or just a quick, like, we got Fluffy. We've got, you know, every comedian in the New York City radius, but no screen time for Shane McMahon.
Well, man doesn't have a podcast. That's the big difference, right? He's not an athlete, doesn't have a rap album, doesn't even have a podcast. So maybe get on that, Shane. Yeah. I mean, we don't know. Like, this could have been by request. We don't know. But I mean, the fact that he posted a photo of himself on the internet.
I don't think he was trying to be conspicuous, or else he's not posting this. He made it very clear. I'm here at the show for John Cena with my son. And I'm sitting much further back than my sister was when she was shown. So
It is incredibly fascinating to consider what might be going on in that family.
So the arrivals include Logan Paul, now sporting a bulletproof vest.
Shield vest, maybe you could say.
Possible. Maybe he's. Maybe they'll start selling Logan Paul bulletproof vests.
They'll sell anything. Would they sell a Logan Paul bulletproof vest? I wonder. I don't know.
I'm telling you, maybe Jake is going to need one of those when he fights Anthony Joshua next month. That fight is now official for Netflix.
You think those might be legal under whatever boxing rules that they
I don't know how this fight is legal. Okay. Anthony Joshua might kill this guy. That's my prediction.
He'll need more than a vest.
John Cena starts the show. Thunderous reaction as he comes out and he just breathes in this multi-million dollar gate and who knows how much else in merch money. I mean, this is probably going to go down as one of the biggest arena events in WWE history, which is only going to be shattered next month when they go to Washington, D.C. But here in New York, 18,000 people with the way tickets are, it would not surprise me that they did in excess of $4 million for tonight's gate. Say nothing of the merchandise. Like, this was probably one of the most successful arena events in company history.
You think we'll get a press release or some official confirmation of this from...
It's very rare now that they put out press releases on gate figures for WWE. UFC still gives out all their gates for all their major shows, but it's possible. Like, I'm sure the business of this show was through the roof, and it would definitely... Like,
why wouldn't they want to tout this?
I don't know, but look at this. When they rarely ever do it, and it's not like they're trying to hide business accomplishments at the moment. Like, they... They have a lot to brag about, and this would be one of those shows. So it's possible, maybe. Cena gets introduced by Alicia Taylor and then thanks New York City. This is the last time that we get to talk together, and he has something important to say, but is interrupted by Dirty Dom. And Cena, Dom says, you were handed a title shot just like you've been handed everything. I fought for everything, and I want a rematch. And Cena accepts right on the spot and says, let's fight tonight. But no, Dominic wants to do it on his time. Always love the challenger that gets to dictate the terms. He wants to face Cena in his hometown of San Diego at the Survivor Series. Cena agrees, but he has also told New York he would wrestle tonight. So he'll face Dom tonight in a non-title match. It's like, okay, I don't think we need a three-match series between these two. But before anything can be made, Cena is jumped by Dominic with the help of Balor and JD McDonagh. And who's going to come to Cena's aid? Would they just let him get beaten to a pulp? Sheamus runs down and Rey Mysterio, fresh off of his surgery back in April, is back for his first match in 7 months. And we are going to get into an impromptu six-man tag. And Adam Pearce could breathe a sigh of relief that a match got booked to take care of John Cena's request for one final match.
Maybe he had a great backup option that he just had to scrap, you know, because he got this, perhaps. Yeah. First of all, of course, it was incredible atmosphere. And I thought, like, this opening segment was worth watching just for the entrance and just to see, like, this moment. I thought they captured it really, really well. It's hard to think that this guy who, like, used to get booed out of buildings pretty regularly would retire to, like, this sort of amount of love, you know, for his final appearances. So, I mean, really, they've captured, I would say, like, this entire feeling of Cena's last moments as an active competitor really well on these shows. But I have to say, I thought the reveal of this main event kind of left me a bit disappointed, you know, considering that, like, they announced this ahead of time. I think it got a lot of our hopes up about, like, who possibly the opponent could be. And it's not like I was expecting a five-star match or anything, but I still think, like, with his dwindling amount of dates and dwindling amount of, like, ring time, it still offered the opportunity for, like, a dream match scenario, or at least some sort of, like, what if scenario to be finally answered, even visually. So not only did we, you know, not necessarily get that for this MSG show, we didn't even get that for the Survivor Series show, because they decided to announce the rematch rather than what I would have preferred, a fresher opponent for Cena for his second last match.
Were there any ideas you had of, like, what you were hoping for?
Well, that sort of is the issue. Like, I mean, there wasn't really anybody that stood out to me, or at least, like, one that made sense. But I think I would have still preferred a lot of other options to another match with Dominic, which I wasn't that keen on seeing again.
I'll tell you, like, as crazy as it sounds, like, I think there's a lot of fans out there who really did believe, like, Adam Copeland was going to show up for one of these. Like, as much as I was chatting with someone today, and they were, like, convinced, like, don't you think, like, Edge is coming back for one of these matches? I'm like, no, I don't think that at all. But I think that that really did take the audience, like, just the disappearance from AEW, and I think people just felt like, this makes too much sense. It's got to be Adam Copeland. But that was never going to be on the table to be able to happen. But no.
And I wonder if Ariel will ask Tony Khan perhaps about this, since it's somewhat topical. But I never really believed it ever myself.
So it's Cena, Rey, and Sheamus against Dominic, Finn, and JD McDonagh. They have the advantage on Sheamus early, and then Rey gets the tag after the break, and he's back instant. Tilt-a-whirl head scissors onto Finn. Dom trips up Rey to stop a 619 and just takes Rey, slides him across the ring to the floor, and it's Dominic getting heat with the Three Amigos on his dad into a brainbuster, and Rey fights off Balor by sending him into the corner, into JD's balls, and makes the tag to Cena. So at this point, he comes in, five-knuckle shuffle to JD. He goes for the AA. JD lands on his feet and hits a headbutt on Cena, and everyone comes in. The Judgment Day get a spot on Cena where we get a moonsault, followed by a coup de grace, followed by a Dominic frog splash, and they all pile on Cena, but the partners break up the fall, and they do their ultimate babyface comeback with a 30 beats followed by a 15 knuckle shuffle and then a double 619 by Dominic, or sorry, by Rey, and followed by a brogue kick and an AA to JD McDonagh, who gets to eat the final pin of John Cena on Raw. 14 minutes and 42 seconds, and as they all exit together, Cena looks into the camera and says, "Monday Night Raw, that's all she wrote." And that was the end.
Mm-hmm. So despite, like, you know, some disappointment towards this match, how could you be disappointed by the end of this? I thought this was just so much fun. It was.
I thought this worked pretty well. Like, yeah. I didn't have expectations of Cena coming out and doing some big singles contest. I think we sort of are going to get that in the last two. I think this was just a chance to do a fun match. And I think he wants to work with as many people on this last little run as possible. And Sheamus and Rey being two people to check off that box.
Totally. Sheamus did the Cesaro swing. I don't know if you mentioned that in your recap. I forget.
Oh, I actually missed that spot.
He did the Cesaro swing during the commercial break. So just
so that means Edge and Claudio are showing up
at well, maybe they're entering the tournament. We might. Do we have any more slots?
No, we don't have any more mystery slots.
Well, anything can happen, John. Yeah, but I thought, like, what I thought initially might have worked against this, you know, this being like an impersonal trios match rather than a singles match, kind of became its advantage. And the strength of this was to see the multi-person spots that just completely, you know, made this match, I think, work to this crowd. I mean, let's be honest, you know, the first two thirds of this were about as average as it gets. But once Cena tagged in, did all those triple team spots, it just felt like you got three heroes together delivering, I think, a very quintessential John Cena performance, playing the greatest hits. And especially in hindsight, like, this was the type of feeling that I think I'm grateful for, because it was the exact thing that they did not want to give to the audience in the first half of the year with that heel run. So to, you know, be able to just, like, feel good and witness the greatest hits from Cena just a few more times, I thought it was a lot of fun, especially in this MSG environment.
Now, if you spent $2,000 for a ticket, would you have had the same reaction?
I think I'd be questioning a lot more if I spent that money on this. But
do you think Shane got comps? That's the question. Did he get comps?
10th row? Wouldn't that be insulting? Like, your comps were 10th row?
I mean, I don't know.
Your last name is McMahon? Really?
No. I'm sure that's going to come up in this interview tomorrow with Tony Khan. The Shane McMahon photo.
Maybe. It's November, which means holiday shopping season is officially here. Uncommon Goods takes the stress out of gifting with thousands of unique, high-quality finds that you won't see anywhere else. Their thoughtful curation makes shopping simple. But heads up. popular gifts sell fast, so now's a great time to start crossing those names off of your list. Uncommon Goods offers high-quality, unique items, like the New York Times Custom Baseball Book, a made-to-order collection of historic newspaper pages featuring your favorite team's biggest games, star players, and memorable moments straight from the Times archives. You can even personalize it with a name for that extra special touch. Perfect for that baseball fan who might still need a bit of cheering up from their team's heartbreaking World Series Game 7 loss. Uncommon Goods has something for every kind of person. Book lovers, history buffs, foodies, gardeners. Shopping there supports small makers crafting limited-run handcrafted products. So don't wait. Cross those names off your list before the rush. For 15% off your next gift, head to uncommongoods.com/postwrestling. That's uncommongoods.com/postwrestling for 15% off. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary.
This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, Rewind Away looks at some of the biggest retirement matches in wrestling history, featuring matches involving Terry Funk, Ric Flair, Sting, and Tam Nakano. Plus, John Pollock and Brandon from New Jersey get together to look back at season 4 of 90210, a season that brought you John Sears, Lucinda Nicholson, David's meth addiction, and Brandon moving in on Kelly Taylor. Book Club will cover This Book Is All Elite by Keith Elliott Greenberg. Plus, we have reviews of TNA Turning Point, UFC 322, and so much more. $6 gets you all this at postwrestlingcafe.com. So that was all of Cena on the show, and he's going to face Dominic at the Survivor Series for the Intercontinental title, and then he will face the winner of the tournament on December 13th.
So
no more TV appearances.
Do you think the Ray versus Dominic was supposed to be a thing for Survivor Series at one point, or like, do you think they?
I never heard that was the plan that they were going for, but when they decided to do Cena and Dom, I think we talked about like they could do the rematch at Survivor Series, but I didn't find it to be the most exciting option. But I don't even know what the. Like you're going into this and it's clearly like it's not a case of like Cena's going to be booed in San Diego. Like it's going to be, you know, 30,000 people. You're going to take this atmosphere and multiply it by that much more that you're going to have in a outdoor baseball stadium.
That'll change.
And probably have Ray involved in this match. I could see Ray being involved in some way here.
You think Dom wins it back?
I don't like the idea of Cena losing before this retirement. If he's going to lose the retirement match, that's one thing. I wouldn't have him losing going into that final match. I don't even know if you want him to lose the final match, but I think there's a better shot of if you really want to get this title off of him, it should be the guy on December 13th and not this.
So I think there's a very good chance he beats Gunther like in the final match. And if that's the case, then I think Dom should win the title back here. Right.
Or you could do another tournament with Cena's belt the first time is now to start off the new year.
That is very true. They could do that, yes.
They'll rename it the Cena Championship. That's what they could do. New spinner, IC title.
They will make a new championship. How about that? Because we need more.
ICU Championship. Aldis and Pierce are in the back, and they're all upset because Paul Heyman was able to get Drew McIntyre onto their team. So Nick Aldis spent the whole weekend being pissed about this. I mean, who cares?
Well, I mean, he's going against their authority.
Okay. Well, Heyman walks in, apologizes for what he did, but it was within the rules and regulations. So Nick Aldis is just, he's just not a great general manager. That's the conclusion here. And wait till you see what I have in store for my fifth pick. And I guess he handed over a contract that read Brock Lesnar's name because they acted like the reveal was made here. Nice of them to give the baby faces a heads up. Hey, Brock's going to be the fifth guy. You guys should be ready.
I mean, we don't know that the GMs told the baby faces. They could have left it as a surprise.
Oh, I think they did.
Oh, okay. Well,
they didn't communicate this very well.
Yeah, it's fine.
Left them for dead there at the end. We go to commercial. And Dominic goes up to Andrew Schultz, who is in the front row with members of the New York Giants, including Cam Scataboo. Are you familiar with?
I am now. I was not before. No. Is he a big deal?
Yeah, for New York Giants fans, which I think there's like one or two out there.
So when Andrew Schultz was introduced, I mean, I heard
he got booed
some boos.
Yeah.
When this, like, what is his name? Andrew, sorry, what's the Cam Scataboo?
Yes.
Even when he stood up, I heard some boos. So like, who do you actually like in New York? Like the Eagles people, you know, the Eagles stood up, they got booed. Like everybody gets booed in New York practically.
Well, Dominic got into Schultz's face, and then they get into a shoving match with the members of the New York Giants. And I was thinking that Dominic was playing Dylan Danis here. Did you follow that from over the weekend at UFC 322?
I did not. Please explain.
Well, Dylan Danis, members of Islam Makhachev's team jumped Danis in the crowd, and it was this insane brawl right at the end of the televised prelims going into the pay-per-view. And it was like, it was a pretty intense brawl that was going on, and they did it right in front of the media row. So everyone's got footage of this as it's going down. And Danis had these ridiculous shoes on top of it. So at one point, the shoe came off, and he's holding the shoe after he's been attacked. And Dana White has said he will never be allowed to attend a UFC event ever again.
This is the same guy who was supposed to fight Jake? Wait, who am I thinking of? Who is he supposed to fight? What am I thinking?
Jake Paul Danis. Was at one point. Danis was. I mean, Danis has been set
Logan.
To fight.
He was supposed to
a
fight
bunch
Logan.
Of people.
He was supposed to fight.
Yeah,
Logan.
that was on the docket at one point. I mean, this guy's basically he's a good jiu-jitsu competitor, but is not a great fighter. But has he's a professional troll. That's what he has become. So. This is like
so. This
currency.
Is exactly what he wanted.
Probably. I mean, this was probably great publicity for him. Okay. Yeah. Anyway, but this is what happened at Madison Square Garden 2 days before. So, you know, in another era, if you were to tell me a WWE wrestler is going to get into a physical brawl with members of an NFL team and a really popular comedian, like you would think, wow, this is like a big like WrestleMania like angle. This was like the commercial break on Netflix. And they did recap this when they came back, but it felt like this was just for the live audience and for those on Netflix. Like this was in another era, this would be a really big deal, but it was just your commercial entertainment.
Yeah, when Lawrence Taylor did this with Bam Bam, I mean, it was a WrestleMania main event.
That was the main event of WrestleMania. Here it's just like, we've got some athletes and they want to do something physical. So, yeah, we'll shove Dominic and Andrew Schultz is in the middle of this whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure they're just looking for something to hit online, maybe rack up some views on YouTube and earn money that way. Or maybe this will be leading to something else. It could.
Maybe no? Cam Scataboo shows up at Survivor Series.
This could be the new WrestleMania main event. Cam Scataboo versus Dominic Mysterio.
Let's go. Yeah, that's a great idea.
Night two.
Jackie Redmond is in the ring to introduce Stephanie Vaquer, but as she comes out, she is jumped by Nikki Bella, who explains she did not come back to be a cheerleader on the sidelines or your sidekick. I came back to take over my division, and you will give me a title match. So again, the challengers have all the power in this company, and you will bow down to me. Comprende, mamacita? And the match has been added to Survivor Series. Does that one make the soundboard? That's my question.
I was begging for her to throw in a Stephanie Vaquer in here. Like, it would have been the perfect timing and just reason.
She would have got my pick for promo of the year if she had done this.
Yeah. So I was a fan of, like, the turn last week. I've been a fan of the storyline, but I did not think this promo was very good. I mean, you know, Nikki, she sounds very insincere almost all the time, right? When she's talking in professional wrestling, not when she's like doing like her podcast. I like all that. But like when she's performing as a wrestler, you can tell she's performing. And I thought it worked as a babyface because, you know, her whole babyface character was supposed to be somebody who was ultimately insincere and pretending, you know, just to eventually attack Stephanie Vaquer. But now that she's supposed to be a heel, trying to talk like a threatening heel, the insincerity just kind of comes across as bad acting. So I was not a big fan of the promo.
Bayley and Lyra walk backstage and meet the Kabuki Warriors. Asuka tells Bayley she can forget the past if you fight on our team. But Bayley laughs this off and turns them down. And Lyra is so proud of her for turning this down. And Bayley just looks at her dismissively and asks Lyra, are you five? And calls her an idiot.
Yeah, I think there was like a Jekyll and Hyde transformation from Bayley here. I had thought that they had completely gotten rid of that, but I mean, they brought it back here. And I think that was supposed to be the punchline. The fact that like Lyra was talking to somebody else than the person she was starting the segment with. It's just like it's not working at all. Like, the voices aren't distinct enough to even be that noticeable.
I thought we had gotten this team on the right track. Like, we got away from all the stupid shit, and they were starting to gel as a team, and now we're going back to this stuff.
She just has, like, Bailey just unfortunately has no other character, and they, maybe they're still trying to, you know, save it, salvage it somewhat.
Selfishly, I can't get enough of Lyra in these awful skits. Like, yeah, she's just brutal in them, but they're still wildly entertaining for me.
Mm, yes, they are.
Solo Sikoa comes out with Tala Tonga, and they await the mystery opponent. And who's it going to be? Were we going to get Jun Kasai at the at Madison Square Garden? Close. It's Nick Ziggler. So all these TNA performers.
He came out as Dolph Ziggler, by the way, everybody.
Yes. He comes out just like Friday, where Zack Ryder was resurrected. Here we had Dolph Ziggler.
Yeah. The wanted man, Dolph Ziggler, as you can
see. The wanted man, show. Dolph Ziggler, who, I mean, left this company because he was not wanted.
He was wanted tonight, at least.
He got a big reaction.
Mm-hmm. I felt he was a good choice, you know, for this sort of role. I mean, he is noticeable or recognizable, of course. Like, he, you know, he was like a star, you know, for a certain amount of time. And somebody, everybody at MSG would immediately recognize. And somebody who I think also, like, had his tenure pretty much entirely overlapped John Cena. So I thought it worked for the theme of the tournament as well as just the pot for the night.
So Ziggler early on applies an STF. That gets a reaction. He takes Solo to the floor and is ramming him into the desk. But then Sikoa turns things around, hits a hip attack, and Ziggler responds with a spike DDT and hits the Famouser. Gets a big, big reaction to that. And then Sikoa is up, hits the spinning Solo, and then the Samoan spike gets ducked. Ziggler builds up to another zigzag and hits it this time. Major near fall. Sikoa gets to his feet. Eats a super kick, avoids the zigzag, and boom, nails him with the Samoan spike, and down goes Nick Nemeth, Dolph Ziggler, all incarnations, as Solo Sikoa wins in 8 minutes and 53 seconds. So thank you, Dolph, and he will now revert back to his government name.
Oh, man, really bad week for TNA.
They had a rough go of things. Maybe Nick Nemeth isn't going to show up at the next TNA show because of this.
Maybe.
Was there any meet and greet scheduled for afterward? Where do we know where Nick Nemeth is right now? Is he supposed to be somewhere? Is he going to no-show bust it open this week?
Have you checked with a high-ranking TNA executive for confirmation about that?
Let's find out. Let's find out what Nick Nemeth's character thought about this booking. I hope these stories are explored on the next Impact. Will he show up in El Paso in a few weeks?
So for the night, I thought the match totally worked. You know, it seemed to really captivate the crowd, who treated it as something special. Personally, I didn't get that much out of it, honestly. And maybe for me, like, having Dolph Ziggler be away for 2 years at this point made me realize I didn't really miss the guy. You know, like, he's got like a style that I think for its time was like maybe something that stood out. But in a modern era, like, he's just very average. And I thought the match was very average on its own as well.
He was pretty intense coming out. He was doing like he was like slapping himself. I thought it was like, dude, you're going to knock yourself out here.
He did not, thankfully. No.
No.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chalk Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chop-tees.com/post-wrestling.
Hello. Braden Harrington here from Up Next. You can catch us live every Tuesday here at Post Wrestling as we cover NXT. But if you search Poison Rana in your YouTube or podcast app or social media of choice, you can check out all the other wrestling content that we create, podcasts, and so much more. Visit PoisonRana.ca and keep it lit.
Alexa Bliss is in the ring after the break, and she explains that Charlotte Flair ignored all of her text messages and voicemails over the weekend. But I know you're on Instagram here in New York. So it's like borderline stalkerish. They can get the tag titles back, but trust is harder to regain. And many people told told me not to trust you, but I didn't listen to them. And you've become my best friend. Yeah, I said it, as she is wearing her We're Not Friends t-shirt. They're now best friends. They somehow moved. We went from one extreme to the other. There was no like warming up to this friendship. We're just best friends.
Maybe losing the championship has made her realize.
Well, then there was a point to Charlotte ghosting her. So she had to, like, both her and Nia Jax really had to battle these what chants. Like, they were coming at her, and Alexa was trying to play off of them. She's like, I'll tell you what. And she is interrupted by the Kabuki Warriors with Nia Jax and Lash Legend. Jax does most of this promo and is getting more what chants and says how no one is coming to save you and calls Alexa a loser. Well, Rhea Ripley and Io would come down. It's 4-on-3. Nia Jax is just wearing this Rey Mysterio shirt.
Was she?
Yeah.
Okay.
Guess, you know.
She's a big fan.
She must be.
Who wouldn't be?
And then Charlotte runs down with a kendo stick, clears them out, and tends to Alexa, and then points toward Io and Rhea Ripley. And we were left with, okay, that solves that. Problem solved.
Well, this was still no confirmation that she's on the team. You know, she's here to save her friend. By the way, like Charlotte was hugging Alexa like this, you know, like tending to her friend. Meanwhile, like Io tends to Rhea, and Charlotte seeing Io just like cling to Rhea like that made Charlotte like break, you know, and she started laughing.
She was laughing like, here a lot. Yeah.
She is the Jimmy Fallon of she this is. Women's division. And yeah. I mean, it just kind of makes her a bit likable. I mean, I certainly complain about it, how it's not great. Like
we need the inner dialogue of Charlotte as she's thinking.
She doesn't take any of this shit seriously. She thinks
this is so stupid thing. Of course, I'm teaming with them. Not missing Survivor Series.
Nobody is buying this like tease. You know, it's just like at this point, it really does just feel like it's time fill to get us from one week to the other because we have, you know, 3 weeks of storytelling here. I thought Alexa, like, you know, she's talked about working with an acting coach over the past couple of years, and this promo certainly felt like a result of that. Like, it felt like she was like, first of all, she hasn't had to like speak as a human in this manner like in quite some time, because for like the past several years she's played, you know, the Wyatt character, right? So like cutting a promo like this where like she feels like she's, you know, just talking person to person, it feels kind of rare, but it looked like she was trying to take it seriously. But this crowd was not having any of this. They did not want any of this. Gave her the what treatment. She tried her best, but I mean, I think it shows you just maybe how little the crowd is connecting with the story. But it's also New York. Like they probably want a lot of things, you know.
I'm not a fan of the what chants, but when these fans are spending this money on tickets, they can chant whatever the fuck they want.
They could, yes. Mm-hmm.
Becky Lynch, Maxine Dupri for the Intercontinental Championship. So Maxine attacks her right at the bell. Jessica Carr is the referee, so Becky is constantly getting in her face. And Maxine manages a fisherman suplex and does the kip up. Straps come down, and she's trying for the ankle lock. But Becky escapes, and Becky goes for a powerbomb out of the corner and stacks Maxine for the 1-2. And Maxine does not kick out of this thing. And Becky is expecting the kickout to transition to the armbar, but the kickout never comes. So then she has to awkwardly go for this arm, and she misses it on the first try and then reapplies it. Maxine bridges out from that, and we go into a manhandle slam attempt, which is countered to a sunset flip and back to the ankle lock for Maxine. Becky is able to sit back and turn it into a cover, thus escaping. Hits the manhandle slam, and Maxine gets her foot on the rope. And as Becky argues with Jessica Carr, Carr turns her back, and Becky tries to take off the turnbuckle pad. And that is the straw that breaks the camel's back. AJ Lee says, enough! And she comes out, and this distracts Becky, who turns around into a high cross. And Maxine pins Becky in 9 minutes and 50 seconds and gets the big celebration, all of the pyro here at Madison Square Garden as she is crowned Intercontinental Champion. This is their third television match since August. I thought this was the weakest of the three that they had, but it was the one where they executed the title change that everyone's going to remember. But I was more high on their previous matches than some were. I just felt this was one where, man, it was like it was the biggest stage for them, and I thought there were a lot of problems with this match.
The second one to me was certainly the highlight. You know, it was the one where that, like, I think really
they did Quebec City, then they did Sacramento, which is their hometown. That was the last one before right. this.
Yeah, I thought that one really connected. This one, I mean, partially it was due to the crowd who, like, were just not as into Maxine as this sort of underdog character as certainly Sacramento was. And I
they
guess
got into a lot of the heels on the show, like we'd hear with Gunther and yeah. with even with Dominic. Like, they were chanting for Dominic. Like, there was a lot of heels that were getting the support here.
But as a match itself, I thought there was a lot of sloppiness in this that, I mean, maybe under a more hostile crowd, it was, you know, it came across a lot less forgivable. I also didn't think, like, this Jessica Carr, Becky, like, feud that Becky and Jessica Carr had been trying to work online, I don't think it really resulted in anything. Like, it's certainly not something that was recognized enough by the crowd that compared to, like, a regular, you know, heel versus referee spat. But they got them for the ankle lock, I felt, you know, good reactions for that. And ultimately, this was just done to further this Becky AJ feud. And I get it. Like, you know, at this point, Maxine is one of the longer feuds that Becky has had. And I get the title switch. You wanted a big moment for MSG. But man, I don't love it because Maxine it has probably the least amount of credibility of anybody on this roster, male or female. And to give her a championship, even, you know, to further an AJ versus Becky story, it feels like such a David Arquette type of move for me. And you're now looking at both the US and IC championships in the women's divisions on champions that just aren't perceived as legitimate threats at all. In Chelsea Green and also Maxine. And I think that's a big disservice to the divisions that, you know, really need this sort of like legitimate secondary championship at the moment. So I'm not a fan of it, even for this big pop for this evening.
What about the weekly Take It to the Max Open Challenge weekly? Will sure. that get her over?
Yeah, sure.
They'll go that direction. I mean, they had kind of set it up for AJ to go for this belt after beating Becky, and it does feel like they're going to go to that match at some point, but I don't see this title getting flipped back anytime soon. I think they're going to run with Maxine for at least a little bit here. Saxon interviewed Raquel Rodriguez and Roxanne Perez during the break. Javon Evans versus Gunther. Last time is now tournament. So this is Gunther's first match back since SummerSlam, and he catches...
And he comes back with his Dvorak music.
Yeah. He had his prior music as well. Symphony Maybe he 9. Demanded this in his time off.
He saw all these Mercedes Moné entrances and he's like, you know what? Got to get that back.
That's when you listen to the beginning of this, you do, like, your brain goes to that CEO chant. Listen to the beginning when he comes out.
Well, it's the same song.
Well, it is. I'm saying it's like it's just embedded in your head that you're expecting this guy to come out and start doing the Mercedes dance.
That would be quite the scene.
Gunther annihilates him early on, like just destroying this guy, and he puts on a Boston Crab, and this leads to an audible Y2J chant. Evans turns a powerbomb into a Rana, and kind of the way this match was laid out was Evans was just going to sell and sell and sell, and then hopefully once he would make his comeback, the audience would get behind him. But I think they just looked at Gunther as this awesome heel that just kicks ass. He'd been gone for a long time. It just felt like this audience was more into Gunther. And I, quite frankly, I wonder how many of them are as familiar with Javon Evans, for instance, beyond, you know, just seeing him here or there. Like, he came out like there was a good response to him. But this match was more to me about Gunther and not so much Evans having a credible shot against this guy.
So what was the average ticket price for the show?
Like $5 million.
Like, how many of those people are actively watching NXT?
I don't think Shane McMahon has watched NXT in a long time. That would be my guess. I don't think Rogan has either. Evans ends up hitting a spinning roundhouse kick, goes for a suicide dive. He's caught and just drilled into the apron to set up the commercial. I didn't think this guy was coming back from this. Evans bounces off the rope and just gets booted in the face, hits a stun dog onto Gunther, sends him out of the ring, and then goes for a dive over the top and follows with a frog splash. Gunther kicks out. Then there's a springboard, and he just gets forearm smashed in the back of the head, powerbomb by Gunther, hammer and anvil elbows, and applies the sleeper. And Evans is fighting it. He's fighting it. And I'm just watching this. I'm like, this guy should not be able to survive this sleeper. And he didn't. He got pulled to the middle, and he had to submit at 15 minutes and 3 seconds. Gunther casually stands up, looks at this crowd. I hope Andrew Schultz was still there, because Gunther just puts up his arm and does the "you can't see me" at the crowd. Gunther is back.
When do we get that feud? Gunther
Andrew
versus Schultz Andrew
Schultz versus Gunther?
Yeah. Oh,
I would love it just to see that guy get chopped.
Yeah. Best match of the tournament so far, and it's not really even close. I mean, I thought it was stylistically an incredibly fun match. You have arguably the best giant versus arguably the best high flyer in the entire company. And I think, like all Gunther matches, like, despite the stylistic difference in how maybe cartoonish like their attributes may make them feel, it's always incredibly logical in the way that it plays out. It's the bigger man versus getting the better of the lighter guy, but lighter guy is using his speed and the force of gravity to his advantage, but he ultimately gets overwhelmed by the power. It's a very simple and believable story that was perfectly executed. I thought this really highlighted Javon Evans' selling, which I think was fantastic in this match. Like, Javon Evans, I mean, he's had several main roster matches right now, and in every single one, he has managed to steal the show. And in this one, the biggest spotlight of all in Madison Square Garden, like, at his age, there's no signs of nerves in that kid, like, doing the most spectacular type of offense. I mean, he nails almost everything, save for that RKO, which, you know, was that midair RKO that they were attempting, the lone blemish. But everything else this guy attempts, he like nails no matter the spotlight. So just imagine having that level of confidence at that age. You know, he really is a gold mine. And I mean, I think he's already at the point where you could call him up if you really wanted to.
This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, Rewind Away looks at some of the biggest retirement matches in wrestling history, featuring matches involving Terry Funk, Ric Flair, Sting, and Tam Nakano. Plus, John Pollock and Brandon from New Jersey get together to look back at season 4 of 90210, a season that brought you John Sears, Lucinda Nicholson, David's meth addiction, and Brandon moving in on Kelly Taylor. Book Club will cover This Book Is All Elite by Keith Elliott Greenberg. Plus, we have reviews of TNA Turning Point, UFC 322, and so much more. $6 gets you all this at postwrestlingcafe.com. Maxine meets with AJ in the back, and Jackie interviews them. She says that this is the example of hard work paying off, and without stating it outright, like, she thanks AJ. AJ was her secret trainer that helped her get ready for this. And she says that she beat one of the best of all time. Thanks, AJ. Otis and Tozawa come to celebrate with Maxine, and Jackie is just fangirling over AJ and asking, are you going to stick around? And AJ explains that Becky just lights a fire underneath me, and maybe I will stick around. And Rhea walks up and wants to chat with AJ. Jackie was very excited by this interaction.
So her War Games entry is pretty much as simple as that.
That's about it. Yeah.
It's fine. Yeah.
Next week in Oklahoma City, we will get the quarterfinals of the Cena tournament. Gunther will take on either Carmelo Hayes or Bronson Reed, depending on the outcome on SmackDown. That makes me think Carmelo Hayes is winning this match somehow on Friday.
Like, Carmelo Hayes is the babyface. Yeah, I tend to forget, but he is feuding with The Miz, so I tend to think he
would win. With Bronson Reed being protected to the ultimate degree in some form. And then Solo Sikoa against Finn Balor or Penta. Makes sense that it would be Penta in that role.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And they will have the men's War Games advantage match next week. We'll see if we get a best of three.
We shall, yeah.
Final segment. We have Heyman's War Games team come out, and they are in the ring, and Heyman explains, I have led the Samoan SWAT team and the Freebirds into War Games. I have led the Dangerous Alliance into War Games and the Bloodline, but this is the best team ever assembled for War Games. That leads to, after all of these entrances, then the babyfaces go to make their entrances. This was like 20 minutes with half of this as music playing. CM Punk enters. The Usos enter. Cody enters. And then a brawl begins. And this crowd knows what's up. They're chanting OTC. Punk starts to signal for a GTS that he's going to deliver to Logan Paul. when Brock Lesnar arrives. And out he comes. Lesnar and Punk get into it. He suplexes Punk multiple times. Then Cody enters. He takes a pair of Germans, and Lesnar has cleared the ring. The credits pop up on the screen. It's 10:22. What could possibly be going down? And Roman Reigns' music plays. Wade proclaims Roman is the one man who could have a shot at Brock Lesnar as the man that, quote, walks on water in this business. Roman Reigns is Jesus Christ in this story. And out he comes to vanquish Pontius Pilate. Lucifer. I don't know. I don't know who Lesnar's playing. He's the villain. They face off in the ring, and Reigns removes him with a Superman punch, sending Lesnar to the floor. And then Reed jumps Reigns from behind, and he's going for the tsunami. Reigns stops him with a Superman punch, and security is not enough, Way. They need the NYPD to come as backup. So we've got police on the floor, and it ends with Reigns spearing Bronson and a police officer through the barricade. I can only hope that he too is what?
It looked like two police officers to me. It looked like he was laying on top of another guy. See behind Brennan?
I hope he's not lying on top of someone, because that person is destroyed.
You can see
I only
shoes.
See three people here. Oh, you mean the cop is on top of someone? Yeah, you're right. You're right. There's multiple hands there.
There are two cops.
Well, that
maybe
officer
more.
Is...
Yeah, two cops. Two cops.
Well, maybe Roman's going to be taken to jail for the night like the Mountie was.
I take this SummerSlam. To be maybe their reason to take Roman off TV until probably Survivor Series itself.
You're telling me he's going to take a week off before Survivor Series?
He might take 2 weeks off.
Is he going to be in like solitary for 2 weeks?
That's right, yes.
Get some vignettes of him in jail, like in the darkness.
They will transport the cell over to the War Games so he can come out of the cell for the match.
Okay, I love it. Reigns in chains.
Yeah.
Well, that concluded Raw, where we got all the stars out for this particular show and pretty much setting up all of War Games. Plus, we got the addition of Cena and Dominic and Nikki Bella, Stephanie Vaquet for Survivor Series. Four-match show, which maybe we get another, but this four matches can also... These War Games are going to be lengthy matches.
Well, as we've seen last week, I mean, you know, you can get by with a three-match show if you really wanted to for War Games. Each will be an hour long. But I thought the closing angle tonight was really strong. You know, Brock coming out and just kind of doing his job of putting the baby faces at disadvantage, paving the way for Roman Reigns to come out to, on your left, you know, save the Avengers here. I thought gave a great atmosphere to close the show. So I overall thought it was like a very good show. This was certainly an above average edition of Raw. Felt very special from beginning to end. And they gave that to you. Gave you a big Cena moment. Gave you, you know, a title change as I think... as much as I dislike the decision to put the belt on Maxine, it was a big pop. A lot of celebrities in the crowd, and they gave you a big closing moment with Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar. So a lot of star power on this one.
It felt like a really big show for the company, and financially it was, and certainly this crowd, like, you spared no expense with putting all the stars loaded up. Like, this kind of felt like your unofficial go-home show for Survivor Series. It almost feels like these remaining TVs are just minor. You have to do the angle to add AJ and Becky to the women's side, but I think everyone knows what you're getting, and Charlotte and Rhea doing, I don't know, like a sit-down heart-to-heart.
You got Dolph Ziggler, you got AJ Lee on the show as well, so like two surprises, and I thought Gunther versus Devon Evans.
Wow, and we got no reunion between Dolph and AJ on this show.
You're right.
What a missed opportunity.
I'm sure Big E was there somewhere in the back as well. I hope for an online photo at least.
Yeah, maybe we'll get the three of them some future photo. But yes, that was the final episode of Cena on Raw. We'll never see him on Raw ever again.
Not as an active performer, John. World of difference, okay? Next time you see him on the show, he will not be performing. He will be just a civilian, okay? Talking, maybe. Maybe in a backstage moment, maybe even taking a bump or two, but he won't be a performer.
That's John Cena sitting with Cam Scataboo.
Yes, right.
All right, everybody. We're going to say goodbye here on the YouTube feed because all the fun is going to continue on the Post Wrestling Cafe. We have feedback and questions that you can always send in to us on the forum. We're going to tackle those. And then we're going to pour out our hearts and really, really get into some man discussions afterwards as well. So that's all to come on the cafe.
Hey, wellness policy tomorrow at youtube.com/postwrestling at 3 p.m. Eastern time. We're Neil Flanagan, Jordan Goodman. Sorry, I'm so sorry. 1 p.m. Eastern time. Well, Neil Flanagan, Jordan Goodman, and myself will be talking about public speaking. All right.
Oh, okay.
What we're doing right now and talking to a wide, wide, wide audience of millions and millions of people that listen to this podcast every week. So we'll be talking about it, maybe what our podcasting journeys have been like, or just the idea of talking to a crowd and the nervousness that might come along with it. So join us tomorrow, 1 p.m. Eastern time at youtube.com/postwrestling.
This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. Postwrestlingcafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.